Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. I represent the Political Center, and I'm in the studio with Senator Dan McKay on the right.
Hey, everybody.
And on the left, Shireen Gourbani. Nice to have you.
Happy to be back.
Got the Salt Lake County Council well represented and the Utah Legislature.
Yeah.
And I don't know about the two of you, but I have incredible Trump fatigue and incredible impeachment fatigue.
Oh, well. Do we throw tax fatigue in there as well?
I bring it up because I'm not sure how much I feel like talking about it, but I think we should at least talk about the Ben McAdams quandary and where the Utah congressional delegation's coming down on the impeachment question now that they've had articles of impeachment drafted. Shireen, you're following this. What are you seeing among the Utah congressional delegation?
Well, having been a person who took a shot at it, I will say I do not envy McAdams' position. In fact, I feel like for every person, this has to be difficult. I would hope that it's a difficult decision for each member of our delegation. But what I can tell you, and I guess what I've been thinking a lot about Ben, is that I'm grateful. I've only gotten to know him really in the last couple of years. And I'm really grateful that we have somebody there who is being thoughtful, who is being conscientious. We heard today that Curtis came out and said that he will not be supporting impeachment. I am certain that Bishop and Stewart are in the same boat. But I think all of us should be demanding that our representatives are being thoughtful over what is a very challenging moment in our history.
It is. Dan, what I'm picking up is that Congressman McAdams is making a play at the censure, the middle ground, which is a place that I would naturally find appealing.
Sure.
In other words, I don't think this president's fit for office. I would not be supporting Donald Trump. Whether, you know, you impeach the person under these circumstances or whether you censure him and let an election happen, I could be persuaded there. And I wondered if we're going to be in a situation where Ben McAdams goes for the censure and in the end doesn't support impeachment.
Well, I won't be surprised if he doesn't, but if he doesn't, it's because leadership will have let him off the hook, knowing the realities of his election and the tenuous tightrope that he has to walk, right?
He won by less than 600 votes, correct?
And less than seven.
Less than seven, okay.
Yeah. If he doesn't have to vote for it, it will be because they have the votes, right? And so these are kind of an internal political reality of things. But if you're in one of those swing seats, and it even happens here in Utah, where you're in one of those swing seats, everybody kind of says, well, we have the votes. We don't really necessarily need you. There's no reason for you to jump off this bridge, so to speak. Go ahead and be politically courageous on the other side, right? And you can argue for a moderate tone and those kinds of things. It's really sad, though. I read an article today just talking about how many of those who are in front of this issue, the impeachment issue, Speaker Pelosi, Maxine Waters, and went down the list, right? And it talked about all of their reactions immediately after Donald Trump was elected. And guess what they all talked about? There's no way this president will make it through this term. Mm-hmm. We're going to make sure he's impeached. We're going to yada, 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 right? And they have literally been looking through couch cushions, under Twitter, in every possible direction to try and find something. And in some ways, it feels like a disappointing, self-fulfilling political prophecy.
Okay, but on the other side of that, that is never the place that Ben McAdams has been.
Oh, that's fair.
I really do believe that we all would be better served if each and every one of us in every district in Utah thought seriously that our representative was considering this with the full weight of the moment that we're in. And I do not think that that's what I'm getting with my representative, Chris Stewart.
Yeah. Oh, do you need a hug?
No.
I just want to offer in case you need some support or something,
Let's all three
it's
of us give...
hug a Democrat.
Let's figure out this guy. Let's give the good congressman advice, so Ben McAdams' advice on this. And I've struggled here with what to say because there's the one thing that says, vote your conscience. There's another one that says, represent your people. What do they want? Mm-hmm. And then there's just a third that says, this is a moment in history that you want to be on the right side of history. What is that?
Yeah.
And I guess where I'm going to come down is I think he should not support impeachment, but he should do everything he can to have us. And it's partly because of where it goes. It goes to the Senate. It's not going to be successful.
Yeah.
But pick some other way to show that what the president's done is unacceptable. Shireen, your advice to the congressman.
So I believe that there is good evidence that the 4th District is not a district that is a huge Trump-supporting area. Trump only had about 39% of the vote there. And I think if we are asking people to be reflective of their districts, to listen to their constituents, I would ask that he take seriously the calls and advice and the information that he's getting from his district.
Yeah. Dan. Mm.
Well, I will say, Congressman McAdams, if you're listening to the podcast or listening to the show, I will say, is there any way, like there's a fire or something that you have to be at instead of that vote?
That's a political answer.
There is something else you could be at, be it a fundraiser, I won't care.
Oh, be it a fundraiser,
saying,
that would go over.
I'm just saying something else, right? Maybe you have a kid with the sniffles and you got to be home. I would just say that's what you might consider.
Dan, this is where if you ever want me to be your political advisor, I would just say, Dan, lose that idea.
Well,
that's
not
going to reflect well on the Congress.
I'm not saying that's the approach I would take, but I know that he is in this he's in this Gordian knot, right? That cannot, you know, and it is this nature of being in a swing district that is difficult to defend, whether you're Republican or Democrat. And trying to make decisions that are thoughtful, like Shireen is asking him to make, and knowing that no matter what you do, it's going to anger a certain portion of your district, and they're going to come after you. And that's it's an unfortunate political side effect, because I do think Representative McAdams is a thoughtful lawmaker. You know, I ran into him we were actually, oddly enough, at the same political, or no, we were at a holiday party. Mm-hmm. And we somehow have a mutual friend, and we were talking. And
a lot
I
of
said,
political people there, apparently.
Yeah, well, surprisingly, there weren't, but somehow we ran into each other.
Well, there you go.
And I asked him, I said, how is it going? And he said, this is tough. And that was kind of the, that was kind of the deal, and I get it. It shows. This is tough.
I think one of the disappointing parts of this is the vote that he takes on this will probably be one thing that sticks in the mind of so many people, and they will ignore the hard work that he has been doing on housing, trying to work on reducing the cost of prescription drugs, the robocall thing that just happened. All of that will go away, and people will focus on this one element. And I think that's a real unfortunate outcome of this presidency.
Yeah. Shireen and Dan, I had this other thought that it's felt like I'm in this tunnel, and it's dark, 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 but at the way end, I can see this light. And a little bit of that light, you know, I guess was showing this week with the NAFTA discussions and the USMCA, so the US-Mexico-Canada Trade Act. In the midst of all this chaos about impeachment and whatnot, you had Democrats signaling that they may support this. Mm-hmm. And as an economist, I'm really excited about that. Mexico and Canada, huge trading partners for Utah and huge for the nation. So maybe there's a little light there.
There is a little light there. And I think one of the things that I heard Speaker Pelosi say, I believe it was just maybe today or yesterday, was that nobody's political future is more important than American workers, and really putting American people first. And in this time of great division, when people are so sick of the fighting, it is good to see something moving forward.
Yeah. Dan, do you see that light? And are you supportive of the USMCA? Oh, come on.
No,
this
like
one's easy. We're finding common ground.
Yes, I'm good.
Trump negotiated it.
Yes, but even in the Trump negotiation, right, you still have things like Speaker Pelosi saying, we kicked their butt, right, as though it is a political win for Democrats to beat the credit of the president. Again, it goes down to the toxic nature that's going on in D.C., where you have the president and the speaker and everybody fighting, not looking out for what's best for America. They're just trying to figure out what's in it for them. And that's, I don't know. Yes, I feel like it's a positive step forward, and I'm grateful for those steps to move forward with that trade agreement. But the posturing, I could do without.
Yeah. Did you two both see the news about the Trump administration moving to end food stamps for about 700,000 Americans? That kind of caught my attention, especially in the second section of the podcast. We're going to talk about tax reform, and you got the sales tax on food. And one of the issues of why it seems okay to have a sales tax on food is that the sales tax not applied to food stamps or SNAP. Quick comments from both of you on that. Dan?
You know, I heard about this earlier today, and I understand what the president's trying to accomplish, because if most people look at the food stamp program itself, it is run rather inefficiently. Mm-hmm. There are some real problems with how it is administered. And so there's got to be a way
to improve those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's not the abusive element. But like what kinds of foods are available that you can buy, those kinds of things. And so there's some of these limitations that have been inserted into the program that, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, aren't improving things. So I understand the desire. I think I would probably try and look at that and say, is there a way to make it more efficient or fix it? And I think that's really where the president's going. And that's why he's throwing out this far part, and he can negotiate from there.
Shireen, you'll get the last word on this one.
So this is going to hit the poorest of the poor in our state. A small number of individuals, but it is people who are struggling to put food on the table. And that is just out of line with the priorities I believe that we should have. The thing that I think is particularly troubling about this is that it kicks out what was a bipartisan agreement that came through the Farm Bill on what they were going to do with this. And ultimately, the Farm Bill said that we're going to leave some flexibility to states so they can move this around in ways that best reflect their economy and their needs. And to see that that when we find bipartisan agreement that gets kicked out by this president is just not good.
Yeah. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Shireen Gurbani and Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Dan McKay on the right.
Shireen Gurbani on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and it's an important week in public policy. We have a special session. Very unusual to have a special session in December.
Mm.
I mean, you know, within a few weeks, they'll be in the general session.
The legislature, yeah, okay, so I had a town hall last night with my own constituents, and we all just kind of sat around and talked about the one thing I did highlight is I was walking into the building, we're giving the town hall, there's a giant Christmas tree, and it's decorated and all these things, and I thought of the irony of having a tax policy conversation, which was the very problem that Joseph and Mary were dealing with when they were being driven to Bethlehem on the way to their hometown of Nazareth.
Wow.
And to have that as we are walking into this meeting to talk about tax right before the holidays, somehow I felt like an agent of Caesar.
Dan, I wonder if there has ever been a time when there's been a special session in December. Because, you know, normally special sessions are going to be in the June, July, August, October. The true, you know, as far away as you can get from the general session, 45 days starting in January.
You know how in high schools where they have banners up on the ceiling about years that they won some award or some championship or something?
Yeah.
It'd be interesting for the legislature to have that for every year they didn't have a special session.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, here we are again, another special session. Yeah. We had one last year and we'll do a couple more, I'm sure.
Shireen, I want to hear your comments on this, but I will break it down in this way. We all knew a special session was coming. Mm-hmm. The governor had signaled that. The speaker, the president had signaled that. And they had actually said Thursday would be the day, but they have to have 48 hours between when it's, you know, put on the call and then when it happens. So on Tuesday, there's no news. And then a little bit before 5 o'clock, you get the news flash, special session on Thursday.
I think it was 4:59.
Okay, and starting at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Right.
So with that as the setup, Shireen, take it from there.
Well, I think both of you would have more to say about that decision-making process around the timeline than I would. I can tell you from just the feedback that I get in the public, it feels just like a further effort to rush to be able to move as quickly as possible to move this through without the kind of thoughtful and considerate response that I think more people are demanding as they get more and more tuned into this issue.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, tell me why. Why are we doing it that way?
I'll tell you the thing that first came to me. I personally feel like they've had a lot of time to discuss this, and I've never seen so much analysis on a tax reform bill like this. It's amazing what they've done. It's very rare for the legislature to go on a roadshow and talk about something. So the level of awareness has been really high in that regard. But when I first saw the call hit, the first thing I thought was, of course it starts at 5 o'clock because they want to be out of there by midnight.
Yeah.
And just for the listeners, it doesn't mean they will be. They could suspend and start the next day. Once they're in session till it's over.
Sure.
Is that right, Dan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
But who wants to drag this out? And so if you start at 10, it would definitely go to midnight. So why not start it at 5 and go till midnight? Dan?
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not sure it will go to midnight. I mean, I think there will be some conversation, there'll be some debate, but I think by and large, the bill is going to be cast in cement, you know, sometime early tomorrow. I guess we're recording this the day before, but it will be cast in cement early in the morning. There's a few last-minute things, and what I saw when the call was at 5 was I knew there were negotiations still going on.
Yeah.
And I'm right.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about some of those details, but just as we go there, a little later after the call was made, I got a little note from someone that said, wow, note this. And it was Spencer Cox putting out a statement that he disagreed that the governor had called a special session.
Joining every other gubernatorial candidate in some concerns expressed about what's happening.
Yeah, so if we break that down, so one, you've got this schism between the governor and the LG, very unusual, meaning because an LG is usually this loyal, you know, follower, but he's a gubernatorial candidate. So that's one thing that's unusual. And then I don't think it's very unusual at all for all of these gubernatorial candidates to kind of take the easy route and not solve a problem.
Yeah, right.
Sorry, all of you, but, you know, what's their plan? Dan?
You know, this happens all the time when, you know, a true mark of a leader is not someone who ducks, in my opinion, when, you know,
kicks the can down,
you know,
the road.
Kicks down the can, you know, looks, sees issues coming and then hides.
Has somewhere to be during an important
vote. Has somewhere to be, like at a fundraiser or a sniffle, right? Not a true sign of leadership.
Yeah.
So, you know, that said, it is tough for any of these candidates to step up and try and take any bullets for this. Mm-hmm. There's no win in this for them.
Yeah, no one wants to be necessarily the face
of this.
No one
does.
That's why they never do this.
And what I've learned, you know, again, I saw this at my town hall this last week, was, you know, generally, people can get to understand what the problem is. They can, you know, and you can talk them through and see, okay, there's a problem. Mm-hmm. Once you see the problem, though, the solutions become innumerable. And, you know, you can twist something, change something, go a different direction. And with an unlimited deadline, you could twist and change forever.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately or unfortunately, that doesn't work in the legislative process. We need deadlines. Sign and die in the Constitution is clear on what a regular session, you know, when it specifically ends.
Yeah.
And that last week is a frenzy of deal making and activity and that kind of stuff and compromising. And that is, I think, important. And this bill is no different than any of those others, except for this bill has had like 1,000 times more sunlight, more analysis, more meetings, more public meetings, more public conversations, more articles written about it than any other bill that I have seen passed in the last 10 years.
And thank goodness for that, because it's incredibly complicated. And you mentioned at the town hall, you can get people to see the problem. But when there's so many solutions and when the solutions are so complex, really difficult, and in some ways it didn't get easier because, Shireen, the Democrats put forward their own proposal, which shows that they understand there's a problem.
Yes.
And I'd love you to just kind of give us the word from the left on the Democrats' proposal.
Yeah, so the Democrats came forward with a proposal that is looking to address some of the problems that I do think we should question if are being solved by the current iteration of the bill. The conversation is that we need to broaden the base, right? So I don't see that happening really in profound ways in the current proposal. But what Democrats said was, let's do a couple things. Instead of regressive taxes, let's look at a progressive taxation. And that means that individuals kind of tiering up at certain income brackets would pay more. So basically people at $150,000 or below would get a slight cut. They're going to get a tax cut. People making $150 to $250 are going to go up a little, and then all the way up to $600,000 a year plus are going to be taxed at 8%. So asking those that make more to give a little bit more, right?
I have never seen a tax thing that goes up to $800,000. That's interesting.
Yeah. So
yeah.
And then saying that we will eliminate sales tax. So sales tax would be gone.
Sales tax is the problem. Let's just get rid of
Let's get rid of it. Yeah. And let's look at doing a business gross receipts tax. And so what the example that was given was on a company that brings in $1 million a year, that they would have a 0.9% business tax on that, which would be about $9,000 for those businesses that bring in $1 million a year.
Dan,
so that would really broaden the base.
Yeah. Dan, interesting to me on this is that one strategy of the Democrats would have been to shape, mold the majority's proposal, mm-hmm. and another would be to just put out something completely different.
Yeah.
They went the completely different route.
They went the completely different, which is fine, you know.
Yeah.
It just shows they weren't interested in passage. They were more interested in a statement, which is fine. I mean, I guess that's it.
If I'm hearing a statement from the Democrats that is resonating the most, it's the need to protect public education funding.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think you have – it's a difference with distinction, I think, between their plan and the Republicans' plan. At the end of the day – during the downturn, the great downturn, I went back, did the math, and at the end of the day, we held education harmless during the big downturn when we lost lots of money and everybody, every other company and every other place in the state was shedding jobs. We did not lose any money in education.
But that's not what teachers say. I mean, their experience was they saw cuts to after-school programs, teachers' aides, assistant principals. Classrooms felt a very different experience. And I know that you say that, and I've heard Republicans say it over and over and over again. But when I talk to teachers and educators, that is certainly not how they felt. And what they also know is that they're struggling with large class sizes already, and they've been struggling with that
the whole time. But isn't that appropriate for government? At the end of the day, I don't know. What I can tell you is X dollars went into education one year, and the following year, X dollars still went into education. Mm-hmm. Now, does that mean at the local level they didn't have incentives in their own programming to make things a little more efficient, to try and do some things differently to make sure that they didn't fall behind in other areas and make local priorities be felt? Yes.
Yeah.
But that's the way government's supposed to work. In downturns, we get efficient, and in upturns, we get fat.
Yeah.
Dan, bless our hearts.
What are you thinking, since you're the legislator and on the Hill, what are you thinking, what are you hearing on the vote count? Like the conventional wisdom is you don't call a session unless you have the votes.
Yeah. And
how
and
much
the votes,
is this bill going to change?
Well, and the votes, by the way, is an interesting element, right? There's the 38, 15, and 1, which is you need 38 members of the House and 15 members of the Senate. But what that does is
and
it
gets
you—
And the 1 is the governor.
And the 1 is the governor. What that does is it gets you a effective date that is somewhere down the road, right? It's a few months out. If you get 50 in the House and 20 in the Senate and 1 governor, then what you do is you get an immediate effective date so the bill
That's
can take effect.
That's a big deal for this one.
It's a big deal for this. And so
you want to get the withholding tables and certainty out there.
But in the end, whether they get 38, 15 and 1 or 50, 20 and 1, it's really not going to matter. All of the signals will be there for everyone to understand that the tax policy is what it is. The one thing I think that it does change is it won't be up to a citizen referendum if mm-hmm. it gets 2/3. And I think that's an interesting question, which I think will be considered.
What changes do you anticipate?
Well, legislative leadership they're out there trying to work hard to make sure that Utahns are protected. And there are two things really that have been concerning to me and to others. And I know the governor shares this concern, but like on the food tax, the fact that people are going to pay a bunch of tax that are poor, may not have that money, and then wait a year to receive that money back, mm-hmm. right? If they file. So trying to find a way to make sure that the government is the one taking the loss in the beginning instead of our poorer families, that's an option that ought to be on the table.
So a prepay.
Like a prepay, right? Mm-hmm. The other element that I think ought to be on the table is the income tax cut, which inappropriately, in my opinion, affected large families back in 2018. And so the concept is that we would look at 2019 and prepay their tax liability as well, so that when they file their taxes in April, even though the forms and everything else are completed, they'll pay less. So it's a prepay concept for that as well.
Shereen, happy to have you respond to that at all. I would just say that I'm happy to hear that there's productive conversations about solving the problem for low income.
Yeah, that's a real concern for me. I think it's a concern for many in the community. I also think there's a kind of a larger conversation that should be had about what happens when we have a supermajority in our state legislature.
Magic.
Yeah, you get to do whatever you want. And I think what that does is erode faith that the public has that you will listen to. Because I know you said there's been all this public
garbage.
Input.
No, you do whatever you want. Okay, I'm not going to let you finish that.
Saying,
you can't do whatever you want.
Hours
if you want to do whatever you want, none of your proposals, the tampon tax, the earned income credit, the food tax for the poor, all those things,
those
they
scraps.
Wouldn't be in there.
Those are scraps
That's
compared
scraps.
To those are scraps compared to what is going to happen to our poorest families in this proposal.
Ben, I have a feeling you've already had your gripe. And Shereen, I have a feeling you may have already had your gripe, the supermajority.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Or whatever.
That's the problem. You know, you try and not do whatever you can.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, there is always the, yeah, but you didn't do it.
Bipartisanship matters. And I really do believe this. I think having a good, healthy debate, having the ability to have to work, having the need to have to work together to get things done produces better policy for this state. And I fundamentally believe that.
And I'm just going to say from the political middle, I've been so pleased to see how policy oriented both parties have been in this discussion. It hasn't felt political. It's been pretty good. Okay, we've got 30 seconds left.
Good.
Dan, you have a quick gripe?
No, I'm good.
Shereen?
At this, if you're hearing this, there's not much time to interact with the policy. And so one thing that's important is to know you can still, since it starts after many people finish their workday, not all, but many, you can go up to the Capitol, you can send in notes, you can still email or contact your legislators.
Let's do it. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner with Dan McKay and Shereen Gorbani. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.